Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Coming up, the Brooklyn Nets season is coming to a merciful close, and the fans rightfully have many questions about the future of the franchise and its direction. From Mikal Bridges to Cam Thomas to Sean Marks to the coaching situation, I took questions from fans on all of it. All the answers to those and more after the theme music. What is up, Nets world? We're back here on the Believe in Nets podcast and the Believe Podcast Network. As always, big thanks to all of you for listening. Make sure to subscribe to Believe in Nets on all streaming platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Smash that like button. Leave a five-star review if you can. That really goes a long way. I'm your host, Eric Slater, Brooklyn Nets beat reporter for ClutchPoints.com. And we're nearing the end times of the Brooklyn Nets 2023-24 season. It's been a rough ride, and it hasn't gotten any better since the All-Star break when Sean Marks fired Jock Vaughn and promoted Kevin Ollie to interim head coach. Said he wanted to see some movement from this group, wanted to see a push potentially towards the playoffs. It hasn't happened. The Nets have continued to struggle. They actually won three straight against, you know, subpar competition in the Toronto Raptors, Washington Wizards, and Chicago Bulls prior, you know, recently to this. And then they come out against two more high-level teams, the Los Angeles Lakers and the Indiana Pacers, the last two nights, and just get the absolute doors blown off of them. So, you know, we're nearing the end. The Nets' tragic number, which is, you know, the number for them to be eliminated from the postseason, is down to one. So, you know, one more Nets loss or one more Atlanta Hawks win that are directly ahead of them for 10th place in the Eastern Conference. One more of either of those, and the Nets are eliminated. And with that, a lot of fans want to know what is going on with this organization. They had a lot of questions for me. I posted to Twitter. I also have my email link in my Twitter account and had fans submit questions. And I'm just going to roll through answering these, you know, on a number of subjects from, you know, Mikal Bridges, Cam Thomas, what's going on overall, the team building, Sean Marks' situation, all of it. So to start it off right off the bat from Ryan Newman, what is going on with Mikal? I know the common reply to this question is that he's just not a number one guy now, and I agree with that. I thought that even this before this season, but he showed so much more as an on-ball creator earlier this year, and now it seems like all that is gone. With such a rough stretch to the end of the season, what are reasonable expectations for Mikal moving forward? And I think you touched on a lot of it there. Mikal is struggling big time. And there's a multitude of reasons for that. But in this second half of the year, he's at around 17 points per game. He's shooting 40% from the field since the All-Star break. And as a result of those struggles, he's slid back into the complementary role that he's more comfortable in. And that role is a spot-up three-point shooter. The Nets have really given the rein to Cam Thomas offensively of late. And, you know, I have some conspiracy Eric takes for you coming up on that in a little bit. But, you know, for Mikal, over the last 13 games, he's taken 192 shots. 115 of them have been threes. So 60% of his shots during that stretch have been three-pointers. And if you look at over the first half of the season, 41 games, he took 695 shots and 254 of them were threes. So that's around 36% of his shots were three-pointers. So he's, you know, nearly doubling the amount of his field goal attempts that are threes. And the reason for that is he's playing a lot more off the ball. He hasn't really had as much juice going to the rim or even getting to his spots in the mid-range as he did in the first half of the year. So his role in this offense has really transformed from what we saw in the second half of last season and the first half of this season down the stretch of this year, amid his struggles, amid it looks like some fatigue, to him sliding back into closer to what he did during his Phoenix days. Now, I think there are several factors playing into Mikal's struggles and the role change. The first of which is that he's miscast, you know, on this roster this season. You know, as you said, he's not a number one, which I never thought he was. But I will say, after that stretch that he had in the second half of last year when the Nets traded for him, he was around 27 points per game on 50-40-90 for a near 30-game stretch to end the season. So a lot of people, I think, had expectations of, can Mikal, you know, be this all-star level player? Can he be a high-level on-ball creator, you know, in a number one or a number two role for a contending team? That was the question entering the year. And I think, you know, a fair question. And the answer to it's been no. You know, he hasn't been able to do it. And, you know, that's him being miscast on this roster without another really, you know, high-level offensive driver on this roster. You know, so the first I said being miscast. The second I think is fatigue, second factor in this. And, you know, Mikhail is, you know, the Iron Man, all that stuff. I've gone over that on prior pods. I don't need to get deeper into that. But the guy never takes a game off. He's clearly tired in the second half of this season. The Nets are clearly struggling as a team. I think him being miscast, him being tired, all of that has built upon, you know, each other, all of those things. And he's kind of looks like a guy like the rest of the roster that is just limping towards the end of the season. So I'd say about Mikhail, you know, what are reasonable expectations? I think Mikhail clearly has more than what he's showing in this second half of the year. This is not, you know, Mikhail. This is not who Mikhail is. We've seen him do it for extended stretches, you know, be much at a much higher level in terms of on-ball creation and shooting than he has in this stretch. And I think a reasonable expectation moving forward is somewhere in between the two, you know, an efficient spot-up shooter and secondary creator alongside a true number one option if the Nets can get one, a guy who can cook leading second units for short stints, also play good defense. So, you know, if I'm setting expectations for Mikhail Bridges, I've said it throughout this year as these struggles have started to build. You know, we came in saying, could Mikhail be a number two? Could he be a guy that can drive offense a little bit more next to a star on a contending team? I don't think he's a number two. I think he's closer to a number three. But, you know, I do think that he has more than what he showed in his Phoenix days. I think that was clear, you know, at points in the first half of this season and definitely in the second half of last year. But I don't think he's at the level that people maybe hoped he could be entering this. So it's somewhere between that number two that can drive offense and what he did in Phoenix. It's a number three guy, I think, who can be that complimentary shooter playing good defense, but who can also give you some on-ball juice and creation when called upon within the offense. So, you know, Mikhail, tragic end to the year for him. He looks like he's really going through it, but I think that he'll be better in the long run for this. Next question, should the Nets give Cam Thomas a full run at point guard so Mikhail and Cam Johnson can play their natural positions? That's from Java Ghost. And I will, you know, the Nets have given Cam Thomas run at point guard. You know, they maybe haven't played him as, like, you know, moving Dennis Schroeder to the bench and saying, Cam, you're our point guard. Like, you're the guy that's going to be running the offense, you know, the most every single game. But the Nets have played Cam extended stretches at point guard. And Kevin Ollie actually touched on that after a win over the Washington Wizards last week when Cam, I think, had 38 points. You know, he had a really good game, 38 and 6 assists, could have had close to double-digit assists for the first time in his career. Some guys have made some shots and look good distributing the ball. And this is, I got a quote. This is what Kevin Ollie said after the game. He said, I keep talking about court mapping and pattern recognition. You got to understand how guys are playing you. It's not a 5-on-5 game, and you got to see that. Cam's just doing a better job at it and getting comfortable. I'm playing Cam at the point some, and I love him at the point. He gets everybody involved. He's doing a great job giving us another added dimension out there. So, you know, Kevin Ollie's saying it there. He is playing Cam extended stretches at point guard. And I think you've seen during the second half of this season, Ibergeries and Mikhail, as I touched on earlier, has slid into that complimentary role. You have Dennis Schroeder, obviously, bringing the ball up and controlling the offense a lot. But then you have Cam, and he's the primary initiator on a lot of offensive possessions. And I think it's something that a lot of Nets fans were calling for in the first half of this year, for Cam to have more on-ball opportunity, you know, as an offensive guy initiating. You know, Cam's usage rate has been near the top of the NBA for the entire season. But, you know, usage rate only accounts for how a possession ends, you know, how a possession ends with a shot or a turnover, you know, or an assist. So when, you know, Cam is taking a lot of shots and stuff, that doesn't necessarily mean he always had the ball for a lot of, you know, the possessions. A lot of the time he's getting the ball and making, you know, quicker decisions at the end of the shot clock. There were also a lot of possessions where he just had the ball in general. But down the second stretch of this season, you're seeing a lot more possessions where Cam's the one bringing it up and initiating, running pick and rolls, doing a lot more of those things. And the playmaking has improved. You know, it's been really good to see over the course of this season. You know, I pulled up the numbers, and Cam's assists per 36 minutes by month, October and November, he was at 2.3 per 36 minutes, December 3.0, January 3.4, February 4.1, March 4.2. So we're seeing a steady increase of assists. And, you know, Cam's doing a good job of reading defenses. You're starting to see him get more comfortable. Even some glimpses of manipulation, whether probing in the pick and roll or driving, you know, contorting, using his eyes, using his body to create openings for other teammates. I think that's the next step in Cam's game, because, you know, you would hope that anybody can make easy reads when they're driving, you know, whether you come off a pick and roll, you have a two-on-one throwing the lob, whether just hitting open shooters off of, you know, tag men on pick and rolls on the backside. But the next step is, you know, as a passer, is being able to create those openings with your eyes, with your pace, with your tempo, with your body movement, all of that. That's something that we haven't seen Cam do yet, but we're starting to see glimpses of it. So we're seeing real growth there. And, you know, real growth, you have to admit that the bar was extremely low for Cam as a passer earlier this season. I mean, he was leading the Nets in shots in like the first 2 weeks of the season. And, you know, he was at 2.3 assists per 36 minutes, which is extremely low. So, you know, it's not like the bar was high. 4.2 assists per 36 minutes, that's still like nothing to write home about for a guy who has the ball as much as he does. But he's showing real growth there. And I do think that it's been very encouraging. And I think it's something that the Nets were, you know, right to finally give Cam these extended stretches and opportunities to run the point, to see some playmaking growth. Because I asked Cam about this, you know, last week, and this is just factual that this is, in a lot of ways, this is like his rookie season. I mean, when you talk about playmaking and, you know, facilitation and reading coverages and stuff along those lines, that's stuff that, you know, you can't really always get that in practice settings, which is what Cam was playing in primarily the first 2 years of his career. He wasn't playing consistently. And even when he did, a lot of the time, it was either with, you know, a just completely decimated team when he got to cook in those three straight 40-point games last season, or he was playing a little bit more of a complementary role, you know, because KD and Kyrie and guys like that were there. So for him to this year finally get the rotation role, finally get, you know, consistent reps to feel out defenses on a nightly basis, you know, I think there's reason to believe that Cam, you know, can go a lot higher than where he is right now in terms of reading and coverages and things along these lines. So encouraging development from Cam. So, you know, Cam is playing extended stretches at point guard, and I think it's been a really positive development for the Nets just to see what they have and for his growth as a player in his first real season getting consistent playing time. Moving on, if Sean Marks keeps pursuing the star direction, which players will be part of the plan moving forward? That's from Orlando Allen. And, you know, when I looked at this question, it's something that I've obviously thought about before this, but it gets interesting with the Nets, because the only one that I'd say for sure, if Sean Marks is to pursue the star chasing direction, the only player I'd say for sure is Mikal Bridges, that is safe and going to be here. And even him past, you know, the next 2 years, you don't know what's going to happen with that. But in this, you know, immediate window, I'd say it's only Mikal Bridges. That's really it. Because you look at the other players that the Nets have under contract next season, you know, Cam Johnson and Cam Thomas are primary candidates to be included, you know, in a star package, you know, for another player. So those guys could very well be out the door if the Nets are trying to trade for a star. And then you look beyond that, Dorian Finney-Smith, he's turning 31 next month. He's going to have a player option after next season. So in 2025-26, he'll have a player option. Who knows how that's going to work? You know, if you're looking at a 2 to 3 year window, Dorian Finney-Smith from ages 31 to 34, he's going to be slowing down. You probably want to cash in on him earlier than that. Dennis Schroeder is also turning 31, and teams have shown that they feel that he's expendable these last few years. Although I do think that, you know, Dennis will have some longevity to his career based on how he's moving and how he takes care of his body, but he's, you know, entering the final year of his contract next season. Then you get into guys like De'Ron Sharp, who could be here, also could be moved, not really a core piece. And then after that, it's just the rookies. Noah Clowney, Dariq Whitehead, Jalen Wilson. And, you know, Clowney looks promising and he'll develop, but I think it's safe to say that he's at least another year or two, maybe more, before he's a rotation guy on a playoff caliber team. We saw how Nick Claxton came along. And then Wilson, we'll see. And Whitehead, who knows with his injury concern. So if they are to go that star chasing route, this is going to really be a full-scale deal of finding that star to pair with Mikal Bridges and then using remaining assets and cap space to continue to build around them. So it's a lot of uncertainty surrounding the Nets roster when you're looking at these next, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, if they are to continue and stay on the path of going in that direction. Next question, what are the odds Cam Thomas gets traded as part of a star package? And this is from The Plight of Nets Fans. That's the name of the Twitter page that gave this one. That's a pretty good name. But staying on the topic of if the Nets are to say, you know, stay on that star route of trying to acquire a star and go hunting, I'd say that there's a very high probability that Cam Thomas is a part of that star package if they are going to go that route. Because you look at the rest of the roster, teams are going to want oftentimes, you know, a younger centerpiece to be in a deal. And if you look at the Nets roster, as I said in my prior answer, there's really only two guys who fit that bill if you're keeping Mikal Bridges, and that's Cam Johnson and Cam Thomas. And, you know, Cam is a very polarizing player around the league, which I'm going to touch on more later because we got plenty of questions about Cam Thomas, but he's a polarizing player around the league. So it depends on what star you're going after. What kind of window is that team in? Are they looking to fully reset? Are they looking to stay competitive? Do they have the appetite to, you know, have Cam Thomas, who's entering the final year of his rookie contract next season, and then they'll have to give him an extension on that? Do they have an appetite for that? But if you're just looking down the Nets roster, I mean, Cam is the leading scorer this season. He's at 22 points and 3 assists, 44, 36, 86 shooting splits over his last 12 games. He's been really, really good. 26.4 points. That's ninth in the NBA. And 4.1 assists on 46, 38, 88 shooting splits. So if the Nets are trying to build a package for a star and they're trying to keep Mikal Bridges, which all signs have pointed to that, that's the direction that they want to go. You look down the roster, there's not a ton of options. There's Cam Thomas, there's Cam Johnson. It could be one, it could be both of those guys. Most likely, they're trying to get a high-level star. Probably need to be both of those guys. So, you know, if they're going that direction, I wouldn't be very confident that Cam is going to be here, especially for the fact that what the Nets really want in a star right now, and you talk about guys like Donovan Mitchell, who knows how that's going to play out, but the Nets want, you know, a high usage, you know, high usage lead guard, a high usage lead scorer who can drive offense alongside Mikal Bridges. And if you're getting a player like that, that's really what Cam does best. So keeping him and then looking to extend him on what would probably be, you know, the jury remains out on what Cam's going to get, but it will be somewhat of a significant number. That really is kind of redundant and it wouldn't make a ton of sense. So if the Nets are going a star direction and they are trying to be competitive in these next 2 to 3 to 4 years, I think that they're probably just going to have to include Cam in a lot of those packages. So it would be safe to say that there's a very high chance that he'll be on the move. Staying on the Cam Thomas and Mikal Bridges topic, if you were the GM of the Nets, would you build around Cam Thomas or Mikal Bridges? That's from Rob Monroe. And, you know, this is a loaded question. And I think, you know, it being a loaded question surrounds the way that people interpret the term build around, because that's obviously something that has been discussed at length this season with all the reports that the Nets intend to build around Mikal Bridges. And then you get all the fans coming in who saying, this guy's never made an all-star team. He's not this, he's not that. You don't build around a player like that. And I've continuously said, I don't know why fans can't understand this, that, you know, build around doesn't mean that he's going to be your best player. It means that, you know, he is going to be a core piece. Now, we can get deeper into litigating that, but in the NBA, you're really only building around two, sometimes three guys at a time. And Mikal, in my opinion, has shown enough to be that third guy on a contender. Now, could Cam get there someday? Maybe, but the jury is very much still out on that based on his player archetype. So if I'm a GM right now, and you'd be very hard pressed to find an NBA GM that doesn't have this view, who's trying to be competitive right now, you know, for the next 3 to 4 years, I'm building around Mikal over Cam, no question. But it becomes more of a question if I'm the next GM, which is what was asked in the question, it becomes more of a question of which timeline should the Nets be taking? Should they be trying to stay competitive and contend, which would mean building around Bridges, you know, not as a top option, but as a secondary piece to a legitimate star, as I've said, or should they lean into a rebuild and see what they have in Cam? And notice how I didn't say build around Cam, because in my opinion, Cam is not a player that you build around yet. As I said, there's like, you build around like two or three guys on a team. Cam is 22 years old. As I said, he's playing his first real season of extended action right now. You're still seeing what you have in him. Well, talking about, you know, how I think it could play out for Cam, you know, I don't think that Cam is going to be a 1A guy on a title team who's going to have a 30% usage rating, you know, on a contender. I don't see that for him. And that's not even a shot at him. There is so few, you know, there are so few true 1As in the league. There's probably 8 to 10 of them each season. And undersized guards very rarely make that list nowadays. Steph Curry has been the exception because he's the greatest shooter of all time. A guard 6'3 and under like Cam is, it's very hard to be in that echelon of player right now. And people have viewed that as an issue for Cam because the far and away top strength of his game is his on-ball scoring, obviously. So then the question becomes, can he round out the other aspects of his game to become a high-level complementary piece on a contending team? And that was the question that I was pondering entering this season, and I think the Nets obviously were as well. And there were three skills that I was looking at for him to improve in that department. The first of which was catch and shoot threes. Going to be off the ball a lot more if you're playing alongside a true 1A guy. Can he be a high-level catch and shoot three-point shooter? He's checked that box. He's 44% on 2.5 catch and shoot threes per game this season. It's been a really, really positive development for him. The second of which was defense. Now, Cam's made some improvements this year defensively, but if we're being real, he's still a bad defender. He's not a good defender. And some of that is just size-related, but a lot of that still has to do with lapses off the ball and in transition. And this is going to be the thing that really makes it difficult for him to be one of those, you know, two, three guys you build around moving forward on a contender, because, you know, he's not going to be that 1A guy who's going to be driving offense. So, you know, you'll put up with some of those defensive lapses because he has the ball so much on offense and is really carrying everything on that end. You know, he's going to be more of one of those surrounding guys where you can't really afford those defensive lapses. So he's going to need to improve in that area. You know, do I think he can? I think he can be better than what he's showing this year. He's improved from his first 2 years to this year's. I think he can continue to improve, but I do think that there are just some limitations in terms of, you know, his size, his physical tools, the want to really hasn't always been there on that end of the floor. So there's that. The third skill is just passing. And as I said, I've been encouraging down the stretch. He's shown real improvement in terms of willingness and processing. So, you know, being that secondary offensive guy who can make some quick decisions and read defenses and not really just be that guy who's putting it up no matter what. I think that he's made real improvement there. So, you know, you're looking at Cam and he's a polarizing player for all the reasons that I just lined out, but he's 22 years old. He's shown a lot this season in terms of being able to grow and being able to put the ball in the hole at a really high level. So, you know, this is his first real season. Can he continue to show improvement in those areas? We'll see. You know, he's 22. We'll see his age 23, 24, 25 seasons. You'll start to get the real sense. But, you know, if the Nets are trying to stay, you know, on that star chasing route, they're trying to stay competitive in the immediate future. They're not really in the wait and see mode if that's the case. And that's why they would build around Mikal in that case. If they're, you know, if they decide to pivot, then it would be, you know, more so I would look to build around Cam in that situation, or not build around, but see what you have in Cam as him being a lead guy. So a lot to unpack in that answer, but that's kind of how I'm seeing that. Next question on the star chasing topic, should the Nets consider trading for someone like Brandon Ingram, an expiring contract, if available in the offseason? Would a starter of Cam Johnson, DFS, and a young player, not Cam, with picks make sense? You could then maybe sign and trade Clack somewhere else for assets. Thoughts? Omar Bourne with that question. And I'm actually working on a piece because all indications have pointed to the Nets wanting to go star hunting in the near future. I'm working on a piece right now of, you know, the top five most likely players that could be available for the Nets to go after, you know, sometime in the next year. And Brandon Ingram is on that list. I think he, you know, he's near the bottom. I think he's five, Brandon Ingram or Zion Williamson, just the Pelicans looking to split up one of those two guys, because the Pelicans have never paid the luxury tax in the history of their franchise. And they will be in the luxury tax and possibly even the second apron in 2026 without some significant maneuvers. Now, Ingram, that's because Ingram is going to be up for a new contract after next season. Trey Murphy will also be receiving his first real extension. Then you got other questions around other guys, whether CJ McCollum, Jonas Valanciunas, Dyson Daniels is going to need a new deal. So, you know, they're going to be a team that could be looking at the luxury tax. They've never paid the luxury tax before. If they're not, you know, successful, Ingram's out for an extended period with a knee injury right now. They just got walloped by the Phoenix Suns last night. I think Devin Booker had 50 on them. I think it was his third straight game against New Orleans having 50. But, you know, it seemed like the Pelicans were obviously going to see what they have with this group in the playoffs this year. Ingram's knee being hurt is, you know, going to make that very difficult for them to, you know, evaluate this team. But they've been one of the better teams in the league, you know, for the second half of the season. I think they're towards the top of number one in net rating since the All-Star break. But, you know, This is a team that Ingram's contract is expiring after next season. I think because of this injury, it's unlikely that they're going to move, you know, him or Zion or one of those guys this offseason. I think they'll continue to look at what they have in him next season. But if you get towards the trade deadline and things aren't going well, he could be a guy that could potentially be available. You know, on your question about the packages for the Nets, would a starter of Cam Johnson, DFS, and picks plus another young player get you there? Maybe. You know, I think that the Pelicans would probably push for Cam to be in that package. You know, the Nets are going to have to give up, you know, premium picks, as is the case with most stars, to get a guy like Ingram. If the Nets had their choice, I think that they would, you know, rather go after a guy of the Donovan Mitchell, you know, build, you know, in terms of a guard who, you know, can initiate offense and be a driver in that end instead of Brandon Ingram's like a bigger wing, which, you know, although he is an offensive driver, obviously he's not initiating. He's doing a lot of the stuff that maybe you would want Mikal Bridges to do in that complimentary role. So I'm not sure of the fit between those two. But if the Nets are trying to get a star, you know, beggars can't always be choosers. So I do think that he's a player, if available, who could be in play for the Nets. They look to bring in Ingram and then move Mikal. We're getting too deep into all these hypotheticals. But to answer your question at a basic level, I think that he's a guy that, if available, the Nets should have interest in or would have interest in because, you know, he's a very good player. He's young and they're looking to get better right now. They don't have guys who can score the basketball at a very high level, and he can do that. But I don't really see that coming to fruition this offseason. I think there's other guys that would be more likely this offseason. But in the next 2 years, with the Pelicans facing down, you know, staring down the barrel of that potential luxury tax, something they've never paid before, Ingram could be a name to monitor moving forward. Next question, has Kevin Ollie done enough to take the interim tag off and become head coach of the Brooklyn Nets? That's from Huskies in the Pros. A little bit of a UConn page there, a little UConn love coming on, looking out for his guy, Kevin Ollie. And I'm sorry to let you down, but Kevin Ollie is not going to be the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets moving forward. You know, since Kevin Ollie's been hired, the Nets are 8-14. They're 24th in offense. They're 13th in defense. But, you know, even throwing that out the window, Kevin really never had a shot with this group and this team situation, in my opinion. You know, after elevating an interim head coach in Jacque Vaughn last season to full-time head coach and then firing him less than a year into a three-year extension, the Nets just weren't going to do that again, in my opinion. It would have taken some insane close to the season under Kevin Ollie, which was just never going to happen for him to secure that job. So they're going to have an extensive coaching search this summer. And frankly, that's what they, you know, should do. I'm not going to get into candidates and stuff. I think it's a little too early for that, but they're going to be looking for a guy and they're going to be setting a wide net and looking at a wide pool of candidates to find the guy that is best for this organization moving forward. Because frankly, since Kenny Atkinson, you know, from the hiring of Steve Nash, which not going to relitigate that, but a little bit more of it seemed like just a figurehead, you know, for KD and Kyrie, a guy that wasn't really managing those personalities. We saw how that all went down in flames. The guy was a first-time head coach, from him then to Jacque Vaughn, who was a little bit, you know, did his best, but was a little bit out of his depth there, it seemed like, and was put in a tough situation after the Nets traded KD and Kyrie. And now to Kevin Ollie, they haven't really had a high-level head coach, you know, since Kenny Atkinson, who I think was the best of the group by far. And ironically, was fired in large part because he wanted to play Jared Allen over DeAndre Jordan, who DeAndre Jordan was clearly, you know, trending towards, you know, being done in the NBA. And got Jared Allen, who now is, you know, a near all-star with the Cavaliers. That was a, you know, supposedly a big point of contention amongst the stars. You know, you had comments from Kyrie Irving after, you know, Kenny Atkinson got fired. Like, we don't need a guy who's going to force all his philosophies on us. KD and me could both be coaches someday. You know, all that BS. You know, they need to find a guy, ironically, like Kenny Atkinson. They need to find a guy who, you know, can lead a group of guys and who can do things to put guys in position for success. And that, frankly, the whole team has belief in. So it's not going to be Kevin Ollie. Not, you know, anything to his fault. Was just put in a tough situation that was never going to really lead to him leading this team, in my opinion. Next question. Could you see the Nets revisiting trading Mikal Bridges this summer if the Rockets offer is still there? That's from Kevin Kumar. And, you know, when you talk about the Mikal Bridges future in the trade, everything, I've said it, you know, continuously, everything, all the signaling that Sean Marks of the Nets organization has put out is that they are trying to stay competitive. They want to attract marquee talent, and they want to kind of build towards this window of the 2025 offseason when they'll have upwards of $40 million in cap space and they have just this arsenal of draft picks from Phoenix, from Dallas, from other places. So nothing has signaled to me that that's going to change. Now, the way that I think that the Nets could revisit a Mikal Bridges trade and reevaluate potentially a Rockets offer is if Marks is fired this offseason and a new GM comes in and is looking at this and is just looking around and saying, hey, you know, we're a 29-win team. We have the eighth worst record in the league. There's not a whole lot here. We're not getting back into contention this quickly, and I'm going to, you know, put my own stamp on this, like Marks did when he came in, you know, after Billy King got fired. That would be a situation where I could see the Nets revisiting, you know, a Mikal Bridges trade. But nothing has indicated that Marks is going to be fired. Now, I did say, you know, in a podcast after the trade deadline, or was around the trade deadline, that no, it was after the Kevin Ollie hiring, the Jock Vaughn firing. I said, if the Nets let go of the rope this season, could that lead Sean Marks to evaluate and the question to reevaluate? And the question that I was really pondering is, would Sean Marks be allowed to enter another rebuild? Would he be allowed to lead that? Because this is now Marks's eighth season as GM of the Nets. The Nets have one playoff series win. There's a lot of factors going into that that I'm not going to get back into. I've done it before. But for him to go through all of that, to have three stars ask out within a year of each other in KD, Kyrie, and Harden, and then to be able to lead a rebuild and go and perceivably, you know, be into his now his 9th, 10th, 11th seasons leading a rebuild, that would be pretty unprecedented and pretty unheard of. So the way that I viewed this is that if Marks isn't fired, they're going to continue to stay on this route of trying to surround Mikal Bridges with a star. And if he is fired, that would be how they would revisit Mikal Bridges trade. And even, you know, if Marks isn't fired and you're talking about if the Rockets offer is still on the table, well, the Rockets offer was reportedly Jalen Green and, you know, multiple first round picks. We don't know which picks, you know, they were of the Nets that would be coming back, but you'd have to think, you know, the way that Jalen Green has played and the way that Mikal has struggled, you know, I don't think front offices always take a lot from, you know, short stretches like this, but I do think that, you know, the Rockets have more leverage now in negotiations. If you're looking at how the rest of the season has played out and you're going back to the negotiating table, if you're the Rockets, and who knows if they ever even really wanted to give up Jalen Green, but if you're looking at it, they're saying, hey, Jalen Green's been a top four scorer in the NBA over the last month of the season, and Mikal is struggling mightily. So they're coming in with leverage in that, where I don't think that that same Rockets offer would be on the table. And in that case, is Sean Marks taking an offer that he rejected at the trade deadline, then coming back and admitting his wrongs and maybe taking a lesser offer from the Rockets in the offseason? That's highly unlikely. And then it's also just unlikely from what I said at the path of, I don't think Marks is going to be, you know, him being allowed to lead another rebuild would be, it would be something, man. It would really be something. So, you know, I hope that answered your question of how you can evaluate the Nets team building strategy moving forward based on who's sitting in that GM seat. Next question, what can we expect from the Nets in free agency this summer? Will Bridges, Johnson, and or Claxton move out this summer? That's from Brooklyn Nets, France. So we got some questions coming in from across the pond. Really appreciate that. And if you're talking about the Nets free agency this summer, Bridges and Johnson aren't free agents. So, you know, as I said, I expect Bridges to be back. I think Johnson could be a guy that's dangled in trade, you know, offers if the Nets are looking to really improve for a star. Claxton is a guy who's going to be the unrestricted free agent this summer and is expected to command a deal that is worth, you know, $20 million or more annually. And, you know, I expect the Nets to bring Claxton back, and I expect them to make a very strong push to bring him back because they didn't trade him at the deadline. And, you know, if you're holding Claxton past last year's deadline, this last summer, this year's deadline, all three of those transaction cycles, and you're letting him hit unrestricted free agency, I think, you know, that it's very safe to assume that there's a plan to bring him back. And I think that that plan was reaffirmed at the trade deadline by their other moves of, you know, trading Royce O'Neal to the Phoenix Suns and not bringing back salary, getting a stopgap point guard option and Dennis Schroeder. Those moves allow them to stay under the luxury tax with plenty of room underneath the luxury tax to re-sign Claxton, and they're going to avoid the luxury tax. And that's not just a Joe Tsai, you know, money reason. That's also, there's team building ramifications from that because of a clause called the repeater tax. But basically, the Nets moves at the trade deadline will allow them to re-sign Claxton while staying under the luxury tax. I think that that's the route they're going to go. So I would expect him to be back this offseason. Next question, another free agent question. What's the most we can offer Trendon Watford this offseason? That is from Jarrett Alien. And if you're looking at Trendon Watford and the Nets situation, they don't have Trendon Watford's bird rights because this is his first year with the team. So the Nets staying under the tax will have the full mid-level exception to use in free agency, which is worth around $13 million. So they can offer up to that. You know, Watford's not going to get that much, but they can also split that amongst multiple players. So Watford's on the minimum, obviously. They will be able to, you know, give him a raise if that's what the market dictates for him. And he's a guy that I think they should have a lot of interest in bringing back. You know, I tweeted about him last night during the Indiana game, but over the last five games, he's at around 16 points on 67% shooting. He's finally pulling the trigger on some three balls, and he's hitting them. He's 7 of 14 from three during that run. So, you know, not a big sample size, but it's something. The stroke is there. It looks good. And, you know, he's a guy that I was surprised at certain times didn't get more run this season. He's only 23 years old. You know, that's the same age as Jalen Wilson, who's a rookie. That's 1 year older than Cam Thomas. Like, he's a very young guy, and he has an intriguing skill set as a guy who's, you know, bigger. Looks like he has some three-point shooting potential. If he could let it fly a little bit more, you know, he can handle the ball. He can facilitate. He can be a short roll, small ball five guy who can, you know, catch the ball and make quick decisions there as that really good patented floater of his. So a guy that, you know, I wouldn't say I'm necessarily confident is going to be back, because if the Nets are, you know, continuing on that star chasing route, they're more so looking for guys who are maybe going to contribute right now. But he's a guy that, you know, if I'm the Nets and if they're realistic about where they are, he's a guy that I would be very interested in bringing back, because he does have a very intriguing skill set and a lot of things that he can do. Last two questions. What will happen with Ben Simmons' buyout? Will they attempt to trade him or let him play out the last year of his contract? That is from at Juani Boy on Twitter. And I did an episode on this after Ben Simmons was ruled out for the rest of the season, but expect him to be on the roster entering next season. I don't see him agreeing to a buyout, because a buyout means a player is leaving money on the table in order to get out of a contract. Now, Ben is, you know, probably on his last significant contract right now, so there's really no reason for him to leave significant money on the table. Like, that doesn't make any sense for him. Could they attempt to trade him? It's something that I went over. You know, he's, when you get to the trade deadline, he's a guy that's going to be a $40 million expiring contract. The Nets could look to bring back, you know, trade him to a team looking to clear money off their books and bring back several mid-sized salaries that probably, you know, if teams are trying to get off of them, likely won't be the most attractive players ever. But, you know, they could be guys that maybe could be used as salary fillers later on. Who knows? Like, it's possible. But looking for a team trying to shed, you know, close to $40 million in salaries off their books and getting guys that you don't think you're going to be a detriment to your books long-term, or you think that teams would have interest in as salary fillers, doesn't seem all that likely to me. I think that the most likely case is that they just let it run out and they clear all that cap space in 25 that they've been planning towards for a long time. And I think that that's the way that it's going to go for him. I wouldn't be shocked if he got traded, but I'd be surprised. I think that it's more likely that they're just going to play it out and get a clean slate with the books in 2025. And the last question of this one, what is a reasonable goal for next season? That's from AFT_beta on Twitter. Don't know what that means, but that's what it's from. And, you know, if you're looking at a reasonable goal for the Nets next season, I think it all depends on, you know, what they do this offseason. Are they able to swing for a star, obviously, like that? Because, you know, I talked about this on my last podcast with Brian Lewis, and barring a trade for a star, this is going to be mostly the same roster that the Nets are looking at next season. You know, they could tweak it around the margins. If you're looking at, you know, the room, you know, what tools do they have to improve their roster? As I said, they have the $13 million mid-level exception. They can use that on free agents, whether their own or, you know, new ones. And then they also have a $20 million trade exception that they generated in the Spencer Dinwiddie trade at this year's deadline. So they can use that to absorb players in without sending out any money. As you know, they did that when they got Royce O'Neal in the 2022 offseason or 2021 offseason. I can't even remember, but that's what they, you know, they can absorb him in while just sending out a first round pick. So if you're looking at how the Nets can improve without, you know, short of that swing big for a star, they can look to go after free agents up to $13 million. They can also look to, you know, use, you know, to trade for a player up to $20 million using that trade exception. And they have room under the luxury tax to sign Nick Claxton. I think they'll have like $27 million left over after that. So they could bring in another significant player while also staying under the luxury tax. So, you know, I think there's three paths you'd be looking at. The Nets could run it back with mostly the same roster and just go all in on, you know, having 2025 be that window to find that guy. The second route, they could look to improve around the margins and, you know, bring in a player, you know, on top of re-signing Claxton in that like 10 to 15 to $20 million range and, you know, who could potentially look to improve them. Or they could swing for a star this offseason, whether that's Donovan Mitchell or whoever could become available. They could look to go after that. So the expectations will vary based on all that. If they stay, you know, the same and just look to improve a little bit around the margins, I do think that this team is better than what they showed this year. I think that they're going to have to find more on-ball creation and other things, obviously, to drive offense regardless, because if they're running it back with this same roster that we saw this year, it's going to be another rough season because offensively, they just don't have enough juice. They just don't have enough paint scoring. They don't have enough shot creation or any of it. So, you know, they're going to need to find other things. And if they are to make some of those improvements around the margin, I think a reasonable goal for them could be to be like a 7 or 8 in the play-in. You know, they're 10th right now and obviously like 5 games behind 10th, but I don't think that they're this bad. I think that things really just went south down the second half of this season. So reasonable goal, I think, could be a play-in team, you know, and to threaten to be in the play-in conversation, be in the playoff conversation next year, barring a significant trade that would obviously heighten those expectations even higher. But that does it for this Nets mailbag episode. I hope that you guys really enjoyed my answers to all these. I really appreciate everybody who submitted a question. I appreciate it for just giving me content and giving me something to talk to you guys about because, frankly, the games and what's happening right now outside of maybe some Cam Thomas stuff hasn't warranted a lot of coverage and there's not a lot of intrigue. So I've been trying to do more big picture stuff and you guys gave me the opportunity to do that by participating and following along with my work and submitting all these questions as you always do. So much appreciated. As I said at the top, make sure to subscribe to Believe in Nets on all streaming platforms if you don't already. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Hit the like button, leave a 5-star review. I'm your host, Eric Slater, Brooklyn Nets beat reporter for ClutchPoints.com. You can find all of my articles on ClutchPoints.com. You can also find a lot of my work on Twitter at @EricSlater_. Constant news, updates, analysis on everything there. We got 6 games left in the season, I think, and then we're approaching, you know, a pivotal offseason where the Nets can pick one of several directions as I laid out. I'll have more coverage on all that, the uncertain direction and future of this franchise, what they should do, what they shouldn't do, what they do ultimately end up doing. All that more will be here on Believe in Nets and Clutch Points and everywhere else I do work. Talk to you guys soon.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.